Hi, I'm Emily Abbott, the founder of The Brain Possible. We've created this space, our website, and this podcast to offer hope, to explore possibility over limitations, and to create community for families of exceptional children like yours. And we're doing just that, one connection at a time. Here on this podcast, we'll begin another. We're so happy that you're taking this journey with us.
I always love talking with fellow mama warriors, strong women who fiercely advocate for their children, who are constantly asking, what can be next for my child, and going in that direction. On this podcast, we'll meet another one of those mama warriors, Denise Smith of Wellness Beyond the Spectrum. Denise takes a holistic approach to treat her young son's autism and her other child with an informal diagnosis of ADHD, focusing on removing toxins from their environment, carefully choosing which foods her family eats and which to avoid, and more. She has used her YouTube channel along with other social media platforms, Instagram in particular, to share her family's journey with autism, but also to bring awareness to how using nutritional and holistic measures can help you find healing and optimal health. Denise has a career background in pediatric and obstetric nursing, but as a result of her son's diagnosis, she has started a new career path into the holistic wellness and nutrition community. She's the founder of Wellness Beyond the Spectrum, where she focuses on helping others navigate nutrition, achieve wellness, and healing. On this podcast, we'll learn more about her family and her wellness approach that is helping her son heal.
First things first, can you tell me about your background? Did you have a history in holistic health or wellness before your son's diagnosis?
No. Prior to this, I was a pediatric nurse for a number of years. And then once I had children, I switched gears into obstetric nursing. So like labor and delivery, postpartum care, working with newborns. And then my son's diagnosis happened and that just kind of changed the trajectory of my career. Because prior to that, I was very medical based, you know, like I wouldn't say that I was really, and I don't want to offend anybody, but not really like a crunchy granola mom. But, you know, I didn't have a problem taking a pill. I didn't have a problem taking medicine. I thought that's what you're supposed to do. And even there are some things that I grew up with my family and having an understanding of, you know, doing things the natural way. So it wasn't such a huge shift for me to kind of be open to the idea, but I was definitely in a different space and understanding health and nutrition and how they're not separate and how they work together and what it actually means to be healthy. Because my understanding of that was very different before my son's diagnosis. But yeah, but that's what I did for a number of years. And then once things started changing with him, I found myself being dedicated to really learning and understanding more about his diagnosis, but then understanding and learning more about how nutrition can play a role in helping him.
So let's talk about that diagnosis. How old is your son now?
Right now he's 6. He turned 6 in July, but he was diagnosed shortly after he turned 2. And I remember even thinking prior to his diagnosis, as things just really were just, they weren't turning around. And, you know, you go to Google and type in, you know, these different questions or different symptoms, and then, you know, certain things pop up and I'm just thinking to myself, well, no way it can't be right. Because again, I had in my mind what I thought autism was, and I didn't know anybody personally with autism. I've never taken care of a child that had autism before. So I just didn't have a clue, but I just figured, well, in my mind, of course, well, I did everything right. I listened to my doctors. I didn't eat this. I didn't do that. I'm healthy. So I would naturally have a healthy child. My eldest, you know, she was seemingly healthy as well. So, you know, but as things progressed throughout the year, I was starting to come to the realization that this is going to be his diagnosis. And then, of course, when we did get the diagnosis, I just kind of felt my world just shift and cave in. And I just didn't know what to do. I felt all the things that I think a parent feels when their child is, you know, not well or sick or whatever the diagnosis is. You know, I just felt really helpless. And then, of course, doing the diagnosis and having them tell me, you know, all the things that are wrong with him, it just broke my heart, you know. And I think as parents, you know, you want to fix it, you want to make it better. And I didn't know how to do that. I just, you know, I was paralyzed, I think, in that moment. And it took me a while to kind of come out of my depression, because that's really what it was. But I credit part of that to my husband, because he was the first person that kind of told me that there's another way. There's something else out there. And, you know, of course, at the time, I was just like, are you insane? Like, what are you talking about? Like, this is that, there's no cure. Like, this is it. This is what we have to deal with. And, you know, and I didn't understand. I didn't understand any of it. And I was just really, you know, sad and confused and alone. But then, you know, things turned around.
And that was 4 years ago now?
About? Yes. Mm-hmm.
Well, what was that moment of diagnosis like for your family and your husband too? What was it like for him?
I mean, I think it was really scary for him, because even when prior to the diagnosis, when I started to kind of fix my mind around the idea that this is just not something that he's going to outgrow out of, or, you know, this is just a phase. And I would, you know, bring things to his attention and I would say, hey, you know, he's not doing this anymore. And then remember that time he did this and remember last night and da, 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 da. And I just think it was hard for him to really see it. And, you know, he wasn't around a lot because he travels a lot. So for a lot of it, he really wasn't there to see, you know, in the middle of the night when he's having these seizure-like episodes, or he's not responding to his name, or, you know, it was just a lot of the stuff that he just didn't see. So he was very kind of dismissive about it. Like, oh no, like this is what boys do. And, you know, you're just comparing him to our daughter, you know, and they're different. So, but I think in that moment when we finally all went together and we sat in the office and they did the diagnosis and asked all the questions and they did all the therapies or all the assessments rather, I think, I don't want to speak for him, but I know that it was heartbreaking for him. Because I think maybe as, you know, dads, they have all these hopes and dreams about what it'll be like with their son. And I think in that moment, he just really felt as though he won't have those moments. So he could better speak to how he felt. But I know that for us, we were heartbroken in that moment. And I think because we both didn't know what to do, we didn't know how to cope with this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. What ultimately inspired you or drove you to take this holistic approach to your son's treatment?
Well, I think in the back of my mind, even though, you know, I heard everything the doctors told me, both the psychologist who diagnosed him as well as this pediatrician, I just didn't believe that. I don't know if it was just my own naivete or a little bit of denial. I don't know. But I know that when I was pregnant and I know the child I had, and I saw things, you know, I saw how he was before, and then I saw things after. I saw that there were shifts along the way. And, you know, I just never believed what they told me, I guess. It was like, oh, this is how he'll always be. And this is just what it is. You know, this happens sometimes is what I was told. And I'm like, what? It happens. No, make it make sense. Because with my history and my background, this didn't just happen. There's something that happened. And it's something that I know that I've seen. And I've, you know, I brought it to people's attention, told the doctors, et cetera, and they just kind of, you know, shooed me away. So when I thought about, okay, how am I going to move forward? I was like, there's gotta be something. That's what I told myself. So after the diagnosis, we came home, I got down on my knees, I prayed and I said, Lord, you know, please help me understand how to be the best parent for my son. Help me understand how I can help him. Because I just knew, I don't know what I would call it, but I just knew something, there was something else. And shortly thereafter, that's when my husband came to me and he's like, hey, I heard about this mom who she stopped you know, giving her child gluten and dairy, and all of a sudden he was a different kid. And I was just like, no way. But then I thought, I said, well, you know, in my prayer, I asked for guidance. I asked for direction. And I know that, you know, God is not going to come down like in a cloud and say here, but he moves and he talks through people and he works through people. So I said, all right, well, it's worth entertaining here. You know, I'm crying every day and I don't know how to be a parent anymore to my child, my older child, and then my current child. So I was like, there's got to be something. So I watched the video about this mom, and she talked about, you know, making different changes in her child's diet. And I think that's all I needed, just kind of that confirmation that there's something else to be said. And again, in my history with my family and my background and growing up in the way of my watching my grandmother do things and watching my mom do things, and how, you know, it's a funny thing in my family where like ginger tea solves all the problems, you know? So I just figured, well, there must be something to this diet. And then again, I kind of had to have the science behind it and the research behind it to kind of validate what I was already feeling. And I just started researching. And then I said, you know what? I'm just going to try it, because what can it hurt, right? What can it hurt? And then I did. One day I just, okay, I'm just going to not give him whatever it was. And at the time, I think he was eating like sleeves of Ritz crackers a day. It was crazy. So I just decided one day just to try it out and see. And nobody starved to death. It wasn't a breakdown in the house. And I think by the end of the week, he said his first word again, because prior to that, he was talking and then he regressed. But yeah, he said his first word. And I was just like, wait, did you hear that? I turned to my son, like, did you hear that? He was like, yeah. And I was just like, no way. So that just, I just went from there. And I continued to research. It was almost like my second job, where, you know, I'd go to work and do all the things that you do. And then at night is when I would get to work, and I would be on the computer and reading and researching and Googling and trying to find everything I can pick up about, you know, removing gluten and removing dairy. And there was a plethora of research about that and the correlation between it. And, you know, and of course, when you go down that rabbit hole, gut brain connection and all these different things, and it made sense. And I think that was for me what kind of validated it, because it made sense. The science is there. So we continued on, and from there, you know, it opens up more rabbit holes, and then you start looking into other things. And I think the lifestyle that we just had to adopt, because I noticed how it was making such a huge change in my son's life and his well-being. Obviously, the whole family had to do it. It just made life easier. My oldest daughter, she really wasn't a fan of adopting this new way of being, but we did. And it was beneficial to her as well. So yeah, it just, I guess to answer the question, I just needed a little bit of hope. And that's what that gave me. And then that day in the kitchen table, when he said his first word again, I was like, I took off running. Mm-hmm. And I hadn't stopped.
Mm-hmm. So you guys changed your diet and it started working, maybe reducing inflammation in his brain, maybe.
Yeah.
And so, you know, so you started noticing changes. Were you doing this in conjunction with any other therapies or changes?
Well, initially, no. Initially, we just removed wheat and dairy, and we started noticing a shift in him. And that was shortly after his diagnosis. And then that following year, he started ABA therapy. And I remember the therapist, well, as far as Biomet, like we did do ABA therapy. And I remember one of his therapists, she said, you know, this is like something, like, are you doing something? Because he is moving through this program very quickly. And they had to constantly adapt and reformulate their plan each week, because he was just mastering everything so fast. And he started picking up on things really, really quickly. I was doing flashcards for everything. I was doing a lot of talking about everything I was doing to him to kind of help bring that language back, because I knew it was there, right? I heard it. But yeah, I was cooking. I was doing a lot of cooking. So we did the gluten-free and casein-free. We did that for roughly about 7 months. I did find a functional medicine doctor that did at that point, we started putting him on just basic supplements like fish oil and a probiotic. But I just felt as though we were missing something with what we were currently doing. I was like, okay, yeah, like certain things have improved. And yeah, I have language, which is amazing. And certain things have stopped and his sleeping has gotten a little bit better because that was atrocious. He would not sleep. He would be up all night constantly. But yeah, so we saw the doctor for a bit of time. And I told him, I was like, listen, there's something else going on here. I don't quite know what's going on. I don't want to just, you know, continue to give him supplements because that's really what he was trying to do. We did do some testing to kind of see what was going on with him. Like we did some diagnostic testing. So to see like his stool tests, we did like a metabolic test and he was deficient in everything. Of course, his gut bacteria was out of balance, all of those things. But I just didn't want to continue to do supplements. I just felt like, okay, there's got to be something else. Like I just, you know, so I just told the doctor, I said, listen, I'm going to do something else for a little bit. I'm going to take a break from you guys and I'm going to do the GAPS diet. I read a little bit about the GAPS diet and I was just like, well, you know, I'll try that and see. That's kind of how it is, you know, try and see. And so we did that. And that was kind of like, things just went fast forward after that. Language came, sleep was no longer an issue. Stools, I mean, he was having constipation and diarrhea. It was a mess. After GAPS, all that went away. And the stimming reduced. Just everything got better. And it wasn't like this slow shift. It got better really quickly. And, you know, and GAPS was a lot in terms of emotionally exhausting, physically exhausting. But that, again, was another chapter, I guess, in diving into nutrition and really, really understanding it on a different level. Because I think prior to when I was doing the gluten-free, casein-free, I really, you know, it was just kind of scratching the surface. But then GAPS was really a whole nother level. I mean, I got all the books, you know, I love Dr. Natasha McBride, you know, like I got all the recipe books. I just, you know, and my personality is of such where I just kind of go all in anyway. So that's what I did. And yeah, my son was a different child. We did that for about 2 years. In between other things, we got rid of like all of our toxic household products. We just really shifted our lifestyle. So it wasn't just even just about the food. It was about everything they were doing because my understanding of it was like, okay, let's reduce the inflammation. You know, our kids, especially the kids on the spectrum, you know, they don't have so much a problem of receiving things. It's getting it and filtering it out. So a lot of the toxic stuff we got rid of. I subsequently started thinking about changing my career because I was doing so much work at home with my kids that I just felt as though it was hard for me to go to work every day. And doing what I was doing, it was starting to become morally conflicting for me to still be there in that capacity, in that role.
And you worked in a hospital?
Yeah.
It might have started to feel, sounds a little, maybe you felt a little inauthentic with yourself.
Yeah, it was just really, it was really hard to, you know, have all this knowledge and having gone through the experience I've gone through and dealing with especially new parents and to still kind of be forced to kind of do the same song and dance. And I just couldn't do it anymore. You know, even in those moments, it's like there's the powers that be. So you kind of have to play that role. And I couldn't do that. And I couldn't, and I just felt compelled to speak my truth and not so much to kind of put my experience on anybody else, but just kind of give them the tools that they needed to feel empowered to do what they needed to do. Cause I don't know, I did feel that after a while, after having gone through this experience and really going through the weeds of it all, I felt like why, you know, I'm a parent to two kids. You know, I carry this child for 9 months. I know this child. And to kind of somehow be dismissed and told you don't know, somebody else knows best. I don't know. That just never really sat well with me after a while. So I just wanted to kind of empower other parents and give them the tools to say, hey, it's okay to ask these questions. It's okay to have these thoughts. It's okay to question what you're questioning. And not be told that, no, you don't know anything just because you're a mom.
Hmm. Yeah, that's good. I think everyone needs to question things and make our own decisions. and not just depend on someone else. But hear, be open hearing viewpoints. I think that the people I speak to, that seems to be kind of the same thing I hear over and over. The ones who have found something that works or they're making progress are the ones who did stand up and question and followed their gut intuition. So you guys did the GAPS, and it sounds like you had an amazing experience with that. I've never done full-on GAPS, but I have the cookbooks and I cook out of them. Was it difficult? You did it for 2 years. Is there a reason why don't you do it anymore?
Well, it's designed to be short-term, right? It's designed to heal the gut, which is what I felt was necessary in order to, you know, reestablish balance in his body. Because I already knew, I saw the data that, okay, things are out of balance. And the supplements, I was like, we can do that, or we can just do it a different way. And I think with everything that I was already doing, I became more comfortable with the knowledge that I had and more comfortable with the understanding that food is healing. And supplements have its place, but I do think that if we allow the body to do what it's meant to do, I guess what I'm saying is I wanted to allow his body to do what it's meant to do in the first place. And if he needs help, we'll give him help. But I just wanted to try it a different way. And I don't regret doing GAPS as much as it was exhausting. And it was, you know, there were those moments where I cried. I was just like, oh my gosh, this is a lot. But I knew why I was doing it. So I persevered and I pushed through. And so we did that for about 2 years. And then again, I felt that, you know, I started transitioning off of it after about 2 years because all of the gains that we got from it. I mean, he went from you had to be there is what I tried to tell people, but for him not to be able to speak anymore. And then now he's able to come up to me and tell me how he feels, tell me how his day is. I know when he's in pain because he can tell me now, or if he doesn't like something, you know, these things that I guess I took for granted before. And just, you know, hearing him say, mommy, that's everything. You know, now that we've been able to kind of help him and get him a little bit better, he can actually learn now, which is important as well, because that's the whole point of this. The whole point is not to change him and make him no longer autistic. Cause I know a lot of people get their panties in a bunch about that, but it's not that. I'm just trying to help him be the best person he can be and feel the best. It's about health, you know, that's really, and to get him to an optimal level health-wise, and same for my daughter. So we did that. So right now we're kind of like paleo / GAPS-ish / read. I mean, there's so many different diets out there now, but I'm not so fanatic about it anymore, but I still make homemade chicken stock all the time. We don't use preservatives. I try to go organic. I really try to give the quality food that I can to him because I've seen how it helps. And I can't explain this enough. I've seen a shift. It's a completely different child. And I credit that to, you know, really listening to his body and understanding what it is that it needed. And yeah, I've worked with some functional medicine doctors along the way, but I found the most success going at it alone. And as much as it was difficult and it was trying and exhausting at times, and some of it was very much trial and error, it taught me a lot. It taught me how to trust myself, how to listen to my intuition, how to understand my child better. And to this day, you know, I think I am the best advocate for my child because I've been through the weeds. I've been through all of it. I've seen him die off. I've seen him regress. I've seen the changes. I've seen the shift. So, and I'm not knocking functional medicine doctors because they are great. And I'm currently with one right now, but they're not actually doing the stuff. You know, they're like, okay, do this, take this, and then try this and see what happens. But you're the one that's actually doing it. You're the one that's giving your child the enema. You're the one that's feeding them the chicken stock when they don't want to eat it. And you're like, all right, you do this and I'll give you this. You know, you're the one that's dealing with the rashes or whatever the die-off reactions that they may be having. You're the one that's titrating the supplements and, you know, trying to figure out, well, how do I give this and then give this? And so, yeah, I don't know if that really answers your question.
Yeah, you become the expert. You are the expert on your child. And it sounds like it makes sense. What the doctor is doing is giving you a blueprint. It's wonderful. I have a functional medicine doctor too, and I'm working through my own things. And I work with her every few months and she checks up on me and my progress, but I'm the one who has to do the work. Makes sense.
Exactly. You become the expert.
So I have other questions here, but before we move on from GAPS, I want to know for you, what was the hardest thing about doing the GAPS diet? So anyone who might, there's probably going to be some people who listen to this and they might be like, well, maybe I'll try that. So just, I think it's always kind of good to hear from someone on, we heard a lot of the positive things that came out and it sounds like you 100% recommend someone try GAPS, but what should someone be prepared for that might be difficult?
Well, I know for our family, I mean, financially, it was difficult because of sourcing. And again, I told you my personality, like I go all in. But yeah, it was the sourcing of it that, you know, because where I live, you know, I didn't have like the grass-fed, pasture-raised, all of that type of stuff. So I had to seek out farms in my state, outside of my state, and that costs money. And then, of course, the time to prep all of the food and cook all of the food. And so between those two, I would say it was definitely, for me, it was definitely costly in terms of trying to source the food. And then the time to prep and prepare and do everything, because we don't have the luxury of just pulling up at the McDonald's or, you know, ordering takeout for dinner. We couldn't do that. So whatever we ate, I had to make it. And it was usually me doing all of the cooking and the prepping and the sourcing, all of it. So it was a lot. And then, of course, making all the lunches and because he was in school and, you know, so it was the logistics of it all that for me was a little bit difficult. For someone else, it may not be, you know, but I didn't have a farm in my backyard.
Yeah, I get that. Because even we eat really clean and healthy. We try to in my house, but then, you know, it's not 100%. It's like when we're tired, oh, we'll go out to eat. And you know, when you go out to eat almost all the time, it's not clean at all.
Right.
Even if you go to a nice restaurant, it's not.
Right. It's not. And I know like a lot of parents that look like me, you know, budget is a priority. And, you know, I know a lot of like Black families, you know, the idea is that they, you know, they want to do all these things, but sometimes it's just not always an option. And I understand that, but I still would recommend trying GAPS. And yeah, you may not be able to get the farm raised, you know, grass fed, grass finished, pasture raised, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But you can at least maybe get like some organic chicken, right? Try that. And yes, still, I live 45 minutes outside of the city. So I still have to go a really long way to find the nearest health food store to get certain things. But I made that a priority so other things became less important. So yeah, my kids didn't have like new clothes all the time. They had to wear each other's clothes. That's what we did. I shop at consignment stores, or I would recycle things, or I would just try to find other ways to make it work, because I knew that our food quality and what I was putting into their bodies was so important. It had to be.
And your older daughter, how old was she when you started the GAPS?
So he was 2. So she was about 5.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So she was still at an age where she ate what you told her to eat.
Yes. But it's a little bit different with her, because she, at that point, you know, she's had ice cream and cakes and all those things. And then it's kind of like, can't do that anymore. You know, I remember it used to be a point where we used to go to Brewster's and it would be like a weekly thing. Like, everybody gets their free Brewster's cone because they were kids. And I think they gave them like free ice cream if they were under a certain age. But that was a thing that we couldn't really do anymore. But I had to shift my way of thinking and looking at that, because I didn't want her to feel as though she was being deprived or missing out on something. So I had to work and try to compensate for that. So if everyone's having ice cream, she's going to have ice cream too. It just will be a different kind of ice cream. So yeah. It hasn't been the most easiest for her just because she remembers what things look like and taste like. But we've been able to find a happy medium in, you know, appeasing those desires that she still has because she's a kid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And your husband was cool with it?
Initially, not so much. But I think once he saw the changes in my son, that he's like, I don't know what she's doing, but something's working. So he's gotten less resistant to the different things that I've offered up and we've tried and we've done. He's been a little bit more open to it. And, you know, and I think he trusts me. You know, he trusts that I know what I'm doing.
It's a beautiful thing. You did a great YouTube video about which foods to avoid for children with autism. Can you share with our listeners what some of those are and why?
Okay. Well, my top three foods would be wheat, gluten, dairy, and soy. Those three I find to be super inflammatory and very problematic for most kids, but specifically our kids on the spectrum. And it's mostly because of how our food is produced and manufactured in this country now. It's just not how it used to be when my grandmother was around. So dairy is very inflammatory. It produces a lot of mucus. Most of the milk on the shelves, they're pasteurized. So all of the benefits from having raw dairy, you don't have that anymore. And a lot of the milk is pumped full of hormones and other synthetic vitamins that nobody needs. Our body really doesn't understand what to do with synthetic vitamins and growth hormones and all these other things that they put in our food. And that, again, will cause problems for our kids. You know, all of those things add the inflammation and just kind of add to what I like to think of as our health bucket. You know, our health bucket gets bigger and bigger, or gets filled up more and more and more. We put more toxins in it, and to the point where it overflows. And sometimes because of all those toxins, our body is not able to filter it out as properly as it would if it wasn't so full or overflowing. But yes, wheat again is another thing that's very problematic. And a lot of our wheat here is sprayed with glyphosate. So there lies more problems. It's even more toxic. And glyphosate is essentially weed killer. And we don't need to have that in our growing bodies, growing brains for any of us. Most of us, I think, in this country have a gluten sensitivity. They just don't know that they do, or they just refuse to accept that they do. And I personally feel, as far as, you know, growing and developing, we don't necessarily need wheat or grain in that capacity. I know a lot of people, they know, especially with kids, like, what are they going to eat? Like, what about sandwiches and all the different things that have wheat in it? But the way it's produced right now, I mean, if you look on the back of most breads, it's like either enriched or it has some sort of synthetic vitamin or it has bad oils. I mean, it's not the same bread. So yeah, I would stay away from wheat, but it also, wheat and dairy, it causes the same reactions as if you were to take morphine. It speaks to those same opiate receptors in the body. So that's why you have these kids that are addicted to wheat or addicted to gluten and dairy. I mean, my kid, he used to eat a sleeve of Ritz crackers every day, and I thought nothing was wrong with that, but he wasn't eating anything else. You know, he became a picky eater. And for a lot of our kids who are picky eaters and they only eat wheat or dairy or whatever that favorite food is that they're eating, that adds to that problem, them being addicted to the wheat. It causes like this vicious cycle in them. So it would behoove you to get them off of wheat and dairy. That will definitely change things. And then again, soy, again, another one that has been genetically modified a million times over in this country. And soybeans are in everything. Soybean oil, you can find that everywhere. So I try to stay away from that. And corn. But yeah.
One more.
There's always one more. And corn for the same reasons. So yeah.
So you also did a great YouTube video on removing toxins too from your family's environment. Can you share with our listeners what that looks like and how you kind of introduced whittling those away and how, what you've, changes you've made in your home?
Well, for the same reasons, I thought about like how I looked at nutrition, right? Like take out the bad, add in the good. And I realized that when we're talking about the body, we have to look at it holistically. It's not just one thing. It's not only what we eat, but it's also what we absorb, what we take in through our skin, what we breathe in. And I was like many moms who had like Febreze everywhere. And I had the plug-ins and, you know, you had the nice smelling candle and, you know, you want to make the home smell nice and look nice. And then when I started to read and understand some of the things that's in those products and our cleaning products and our laundry detergent, I was just baffled. I was just like, wait, first of all, how is this allowed? Right. And then two, this is hurting my kids and myself. You know, it's not just about the kids. It's about everyone in our home. So for me, as with most things, I went all in and I just said, I'm taking them all out. I got a big container and I just took everything. And I said, okay, well, I know people aren't, I'm not the only one. Like, just, you know, I just figured like, there's got to be another way to get it, to get your home smelling nice and all those things. And I went to Google and I just started researching and I said, hey, I can find a recipe. I could do a DIY to make my own household cleaner with just basic ingredients that I already had. Like I already had vinegar. I already had lemon. You know, I was using Castile soap for other things. And, you know, so I just started, again, research, looking through everything and figuring out a way to make it work. So I came up with my own DIY cleaner for my windows and for my granite countertops. And I figured out if I just, you know, put some lemon on the stove or some oranges on the stove and boil them, then I have, you know, orange and lemon scents. Or just get like the cinnamon bark that's sold in the store and, you know, use that to have your home smelling like Christmas all the time. You know, there's ways around it. So for some people, you know, they may need to do like step by step and just work on laundry detergents or just work on their body soaps or just work on their hairsprays. And that might work for them and then slowly replace. It doesn't have to be in all or nothing. It doesn't have to be done all at once. But I did everything at once. Because that's just my personality. I'm just like, oh my God, it's horrible. They're bad. I'm taking them all out.
It can be hard. It can be hard though.
It is very hard. And you know, and I don't recommend that for everybody, but that's what we did. And it worked for us. I'm still trying to phase out some of the hair products for myself, trying to find quality things. But again, it's sometimes it's about, you know, doing what's better and not always what's best. You know what I mean? You just make small shifts. And this goes with toxic products or nutrition or changing your kid's diet. You don't have to do like I did and just do an entire 180, but just making small incremental changes, you know, that's going to lead to other changes and those are going to become bigger changes. And then before you know it, it's like, oh my God, a whole new world.
What results have you noticed after implementing these changes over time, your new lifestyle changes?
Well, the good things I would say is that like my husband, he used to suffer really bad with like allergies to the point where he had to like get allergy shots. And, you know, he was sleeping with like CPAP machines. It was insane. So his health has improved because we got rid of a lot of those irritants out of the house. Obviously, you know, our diet definitely has changed. He did not do GAPS, but, you know, I was the one making most of the food in the house anyway. And I kind of just made like one meal. I wasn't doing separate meals for everyone. So he was able to benefit that way from what I was cooking. But yeah, like the stimming has gone down with my son. My daughter, I know specifically with the diet, it helped with her eczema. That went away. But yeah, and even with myself, I just noticed like, even now when I'm more sensitive to certain smells now. Like I can't even go down the grocery store aisle anymore. In the cleaner aisle, I can't do that because it's just too much. I'm overwhelmed by it. But I think overall, just making those shifts, and I don't know for everyone if it's going to be like, oh my God, I took away the tide to all of a sudden now this happened. But I think it's a collective shift that happens. You know, doing all these small little incremental changes helped bring back the health that my children needed. And it's helped me too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I noticed the same thing that
over time have become, I noticed my sensitivities more, because I think one doctor said something to me, you know, I'm not so suppressed anymore. So now when I come in contact with something that my body does not like, it tells me, but before it didn't, because we just think that we're, you know, if you eat everything and you've got toxins all over your body, you start to kind of think that that's the way you should feel.
No, it's true. It's true. It's almost where you, like, the term nose blind to all of it, like with all of the toxins everywhere. And it's hard for you to really trust your body too, because you don't know what it's responding to. You don't know what it likes, because it's just on 10 all the time.
Mm-hmm. So you talked a little bit about essential oils in your cleaning products. Do you use them in any other way? I'm curious.
Yes, I do. Outside of the cleaning products that I make, I do DIY stuff. I use them every day on my family. So I have like specific blends that I'll make. Sometimes I'll just do like the straight oil, like frankincense. I'll just do that straight. Everybody gets frankincense drops every day. I'll do lavender at night. And then sometimes I'll, you know, if I have rolls already or roller blends that I've already made. But every now and again, you know, I'll try something different on myself. And I have suffered from migraines since college. And, you know, they've gotten worse with time. And then, you know, I've noticed a shift in my body since going on this journey with my son. So I'm currently working on my own healing journey now that I have room to breathe a little bit. But yeah, like I use peppermint oil and rosemary. I make a blend for that. Like if I'm having like a really bad headache or migraine, and that helps. I do cobaye on my kids every night before bed.
What's that one?
Cobaye. I think I'm pronouncing it right. C-O-P-A-I-B-A. But that's the one I use.
Oh, I don't know it. I only know the basic ones.
But I use that one, and it's supposed to, like, you know, help with like calming. And I use that on both my children every night without fail. Before we leave the house, I'll do like some different blends. I use like my Thieves blend, which has like different oils in it. So I'm a part of the essential oil family. I'm not particular with any one brand. I like several, but I'm looking for quality. And that's important in your essential oils. You don't want anything that's synthetic. You don't want anything that has any other additives in it, because it's going on the skin or you're breathing it in. But that's the other ways that I use it outside of just putting it in like DIY. I'll put it on the skin, or we'll do like in their diffuser, and it'll, you know, be diffused in their room, or have them inhale it. But I don't, some people do like the ingestion. I don't do that, but that's just me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So when you say you give your kids frankincense, you mean like in a roller?
Yeah, I have it in a roller bottle, and I'll put it like behind the back of their neck, down their spine, behind their ears, at their wrists. Oftentimes before bed, I'll do like orange essential oil, because that's supposed to help with glutathione. So I do that on their tippy toes. Yeah, I'll put it on their feet. Yeah, I'm definitely a lover of essential oils. I found them to be very beneficial in this whole wheel of holistic health.
Mm-hmm. It's funny how kids actually really enjoy, my kids enjoy when I love on them being like, oh, you want some oils on your wrist? Or I don't do it as regular as you probably, you know, I have go through phases, but they like it. And then they start to ask for it. And I think part of it is that they want that love and attention, and it's ever so gentle.
I agree. I do think that that's part of it. And I think the other part of it is how it makes them feel. I know my son in particular, like there have been times where, you know, you have like a rough day and you're just like, oh my God, just get to bed. And he's like, wait, I got to get my oils. And he'll go and he'll get his oils and he'll put his oils on. And I'm just like, all right, well, it's good.
Good job. How do you feel as a parent navigating these waters? What would your message be to other mama warriors who are struggling or wondering where to turn after receiving a diagnosis of autism for their child?
I would say to not lose hope and hope that things are going to be okay. Initially, it was a very lonely place, and at times navigating this lifestyle can be lonely, because I'm doing things very differently than the rest of the world. And that's a little isolating. But I would say to lean into your intuition and to trust yourself and to have patience with yourself, have patience with your children. And, you know, I would tell any mom that's trying to find her way in this space is to know that you're not alone. There's other moms out there that, and there's a community of moms out there that can help you and support you. Because I know for me, it was, you know, I was expecting support to come from the people in my family. And unfortunately, they just, some of them just don't understand. And it's not their fault that they don't understand. So I would say, you know, seek out those moms that are living this experience and on this journey just like you. Because I think we're all kind of learning from each other and understanding things. And just to have grace for yourself. I know when in the beginning, it was very much survival mode with me and my kid. It was like, you know, I have to get him better and I want him to do this. And I have all these expectations and all these wants and the list kept going and kept growing. And I had to just say, wait a minute, he is who he is and he's going to be who he is. And allow yourself grace and room to see that and take care of yourself. Because what would it matter if we do all this stuff and now they're living their best lives and now we're all disheveled and we can't take care of ourselves and we're just a mess. You know what I mean? So I just, you know, my whole reason for even putting myself out there was to give a face to a lot of the moms that look like me, give hope to a lot of the moms that look like me and others, of course, but to know that the diagnosis is not the end. It's not your world is over, your kid will never blah, blah, blah. It's none of that. It's the beginning. And the stuff that my son's able to do now is like, who saw that coming? You know, I mean, like he surprises me every day. And just to stay, yeah, just to give hope that our kids can get better and can heal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is there anything else that you would like to say to the Brain Possible community to be complete?
Well, I just want to say thank you for giving me the space to share my little side of the world, this little corner. But then also, yeah, like autism looks different for everybody. And it doesn't, you know, you meet one autism child, you met one autism child. But yeah, just hope and thank you.
Thank you so much for sharing your voice with us today and your perspective and your journey. I know that our journeys, our personal journeys are so sacred and it's very hard. So many people can't or aren't ready to share yet, but yet everyone really does. There's so many people who benefit from hearing other people's stories. And that's one thing I also hear a lot and had that experience as well, is that being able to hear from other people who are doing, you know, navigating these waters as well, or making something work that I didn't think I could make work, or having a beautiful life. And I didn't think that my life was going to be beautiful at sometimes. It really, really meant so much in the world to me. So thank you for sharing your story. I appreciate it and your time.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed our conversation today and that you learned something new. Do you have a question for Denise? Did anything in particular resonate with you? Do you have a holistic method that you use with your autistic child? I would love to hear about it. Email me at info@thebrainpossible.com. Be sure to subscribe, follow, and share our podcast if that feels true for you. You may also consider visiting our website for more information on stories, therapies, and products that we think that you will love. As always, thank you for spending your precious time with us at The Brain Possible. See you next Tuesday, and be well.